Sounds True presents Radical Self-Acceptance, Session 3, Embracing the Shadow Deities, with Tara Brach.
In the archetypal spiritual journey, our hero eventually faces the demons, but not right away. Not without first refusing the call, backing off, not without decent preparation and training, you know, maybe some spirit guides, invisible shields, charms, that kind of thing. In this portion of our journey, the demons are deities that we're facing, unworthiness, fear, and shame. Our way of facing, if there is to be healing, is a deep embracing. Now, it's our potential to relax the body of fear, to courageously open to what is difficult to these deities, but not necessarily right away, or all alone. You know, our fear is that it's going to be too much, that we won't be able to handle what's around the corner, that we'll drown in the ocean of sorrow. And this is quite a primal fear, this anticipation that we won't survive what's coming. So it keeps us tensing against an imagined future, and it keeps us generating our old strategies. And these are the words of Emily Dickinson. There is a pain so utter, it swallows substance up, then covers the abyss with trance, so memory can step around, across, upon it. As one within a swoon goes safely, where an open eye would drop them, bone by bone. We've spent many years with a strategy to step around or across, or upon the pain without being swamped. So in order to learn to let go of these strategies, we need to find our way of making peace with what's there. We need to find the pathway to a kind of safety and love that can really hold us, that can make it possible to let go of the trance and live in real life. We all need some sense of safety. We all need a container, which is awareness, that is filled with understanding and care. Just re-experiencing pain without that kind of a container reinforces trauma. It can reinforce feeling victimized and powerless and alone. I love the way Thich Nhat Hanh describes it. He says, it's not enough to suffer, we must touch peace too. And in approaching deep wounds, we need as much of a sense of peace as we can possibly access. All of us have experienced degrees of trauma. Every one of us has been abused in some way, neglected or wounded. We've all felt betrayed at some time. And what this means is that on the spiritual journey, a very essential part of the preparation is learning how to touch peace, how to be soothed. And it happens in many ways. It can be the touching peace that comes when we learn to rest in our breath, or learn to take refuge in nature, or learn to let another hold us. But in order to have room for what's difficult, we have to have some access to a sense of safety and peace. And then the second part of healing is within that container to have the courage to touch what's there. Real transformation happens when we can touch the pain of shame or of fear while we're aware of some anchor of safety, of care, some real presence. Now, for most of us, there are two basic challenges on this path of healing. And one of those challenges is that we have the conditioning to get possessed, to get completely wrapped up and sunk in our thoughts, our feelings around worthlessness. We can feel strangled by fear. So that's one of the challenges. And the other, which is kind of the flip side, is that we push away experience and then feel numb or dissociated, kind of distracted, distant. The entrance to sacred space, the touching of freedom, is when we can experience the waves of what's happening in an open awareness without either being possessed or resisting. And there's an art, a rhythm to opening in this way, and it's both intuitive and respectful. And a way that I find that's helpful in understanding this art is that we're cultivating two completely interrelated facets of awareness, and we need both. And one facet is that we're learning to discover and rest in great sky of awareness. And you might call this a wide angle lens of awareness. Very big, very spacious. And the other part of awareness that we're cultivating, I sometimes think of as more of a telescopic lens. It's that connecting with experience in a very cognizant and immediate way. Now, both of these qualities, both the openness and the connecting, are already and inseparably here. It can be imagined like a sunlit sky that's very, very open and very bright, and there's no way to make a distinction really between the space and the brightness. They belong together in a sunlit sky. But sometimes this awareness that's already here is covered by a cloud bank of fears. We're lost, we're caught, we temporarily forget who we are. So meditation practice and this path of radical acceptance is really a remembering of these two qualities. These qualities are what let us deeply love and be with the rejected parts of our inner life. At times we have to emphasize and develop one over another. For instance, when we're feeling possessed and obsessed, then it's really a invitation to cultivate that more open sky of awareness. And the ways that we do it, it helps to name what's going on. Just the act of naming helps to connect us with the awareness that knows. It helps to sometimes imagine that we're sitting by the side of this part of ourself that's vulnerable, giving it plenty of room, sensing, if it's anger, the space it's happening in, so that we become aware of a larger world. If it's fear, becoming aware of those that love us, places that we feel safe. These are all just different pathways that reconnect us with the truth of an open awareness. In an early course taught by Chogyam Trungpa, he brought out a huge white piece of poster paper and he hung it up, and then he put on that poster paper a little V, and then he asked everybody, "So what's this?" And the response, by and large, was, "Oh, it's a bird." And finally he said, "No, it's the sky with a bird flying through it." This is remembering the big picture. It's a perspective. Sometimes we just need to take breaks, take tea, go for a walk, get a massage. Whatever it is that refreshes us so that we can regain that larger perspective, a sense of humor, a way of being with things where there's room. So that's the one facet of awareness, this cultivating of big mind. Now, there are other times that we might feel spacey, disconnected, resistant to what's there, or just numb. And at those times, cultivating a more precise way of connecting with what's going on inside us, really contacting our experience, becomes really important. The ways that we do it, the skillful means, inquiring, okay, so what's happening? What's really true now? And this very non-cognitive inquiry that directs our attention. So we listen and feel into the center of our body, and we connect directly with where life is in the body. It sometimes can help to notice the location. Where actually is this life most predominant? What's the texture, the color, the movement? To sense that if it's a difficult emotion and we're kind of removed from it, that we can feel it from the inside. Sense life from its perspective. So these are the two qualities of awareness. These qualities of establishing openness and of a precise knowing. And they're both, as I mentioned, intrinsic to who we are, to awareness. But in the process of deepening practice, you'll find that in any given sitting, or through any day, or even over seasons of our life, that we lean towards emphasizing one over another. Several years ago, a student came to a springtime retreat I was leading, and after several days, I saw her in an interview, and she described her state of mind as just absolutely overrun with obsessive thoughts and self-judgment. And the content was about a life predicament. She was in love with a married man, and while she had no intention of having an affair, she felt completely infatuated and obsessed. And what felt worse at the moment was that she was horrendously ashamed that here she was at a spiritual retreat, and she was just living inside one X-rated movie after another. She had been fighting with her thoughts. She was trying to push them away, which would only last for moments. And then at other times, she'd consciously give in and go off fantasizing and then feel really despondent and small and bad about herself. She felt absolutely possessed. So in my mind, this was a call for a more relaxed, open frame of reference. And I suggested that she find a name for the whole drama that she kept running through her mind. And that with a very friendly voice, when she became aware that it was going on, just put a big frame around it. And then I invited her just to pay attention in a comprehensive way with all her senses. In other words, relax into her body and listen to sounds and sense the world around her. So the message of this kind of emphasis and practice to her inner life was that she could loosen the grip a little and remember a bigger world. This is the wide-angle lens. So she did so, and she found pretty quickly that in this kind of larger space of awareness, what was arising in a very visceral way was a very poignant kind of longing and a sense of sadness. So again, in the interview, I invited her to pay attention, but this time a very close attention to these waves of experience, to the longing, to the sadness. So now this is more of a telescopic focus. And I asked her, where is it in your body? And she felt this ache and a heaviness, a weightiness in her chest, and a tightness too. And I asked her to just ask herself what's most wanting attention right now. And she felt into a deep sadness and this belief that she would never get what she wanted. So I then invited her to open to that, to feel what was there, to really give it room. So here, this is both connecting with what's there, with the longing, with the sadness, but also sensing the space that it's in. And she felt the longing get bigger, and I said, how big is it? And she says, well, it fills my whole body. and I kept encouraging her to give it as much space as it wanted. She said, it's bursting out, it's bursting out all over. This longing could fill the whole universe. So again, I encouraged her to just let it be there and keep feeling it. And gradually, as she kept allowing the longing to be as big as it wanted to be, what she realized was it was just vibration. And there was this sense of connectedness. As she put it, love is here. I am this loving awareness. And she could still feel the waves of the sadness, like waves in that ocean of love. Listen to these words from Rumi. This is how a human being can change. There is a little worm addicted to eating grape leaves. Suddenly he wakes up, call it grace, whatever. Something wakes him, and he's no longer a little worm. He's the entire vineyard, and the orchard too. The fruit, the trunks, a growing wisdom and joy that doesn't need to devour. For this woman, because she was so in the grip of shame, she initially needed to sense a space, to really sense the wide-angle lens and let there be more room for her experience to unfold. And what she found, this deep, deep longing, once given the space and still felt honestly, became a very big sort of loving, no longer attached to one object, but rather just the space of love. This grace that Rumi talks about, we discover as we bring together both this open quality of awareness and this direct connecting with what's actually happening. Now, as I mentioned, it's very common that we go into times where there's a real trance, where we sense that there's something wanting attention, but we feel disconnected and numb. And at these times, it becomes incredibly powerful to inquire into our own being, to really sense what's happening now. And there's a beautiful story about the power of inquiry I'd like to share with you, and it comes from the legend of the Holy Grail. I first heard it through Joanna Macy, who uses this particular legend in workshops. Now, in this story, Parsifal, who is a knight of the Round Table, goes off on a quest, and he finds himself in the middle of a devastated area where nothing grows. You can consider this the inner or the outer wasteland. It's the place of deep woundedness. And he gets to the capital, the center of the wasteland, and there is the castle of the Fisher King. Now, the Fisher King is wounded in the groin and just lying weakened and pale at death's door. And like the land, he's lost the power of regeneration. People around him are not saying, oh, this is terrible, let's do something. He's not acting like something's terrible. Rather, he and everyone are just going around as if everything was normal, as if he was healthy, living habitually. In other words, everyone was behaving as if under a spell, which they were. Now, what's interesting is Parsifal had been warned beforehand that there was a spell and that he could break it. Not by being smart, not by being brave, not by trying to fix anything. In fact, the way to break the spell was by asking questions. But he was young and his mother had told him that it was rude to ask questions, so he didn't. And nothing happened. He visited the Fisher King, he left, he went on. But as it happens when you fail a test, you end up being confronted with it again. Remember the hero's journey. There are many trials. We don't always show up. In this case, Kundry, who was a witch-like sorceress that he had met, castigated him for not even having the common compassion to ask the people questions. So Parsifal goes back to the wasteland. He goes right to the castle of the Fisher King. And without even breaking his stride, he walks right up to where the king is lying on the couch. He kneels there, and then he pauses and says, "O my Lord, what aileth thee?" And at that moment, the color comes back into the king's cheeks and he stands up. Somebody cared enough to ask. It was like saying, "What's the matter? How are you feeling? How is it with you?" It was a communication of care. And it's this communication of care that can be the ground of healing between us and others and within our own being. So when we're numb, when we're dissociated, our path is to establish a relationship with our inner life, to begin to set the grounds of radical acceptance by contacting what's there. And we can do so by inquiring, what wants acceptance? What wants attention? What's the most difficult part about this? Now, as I mentioned earlier, in contrast to being disassociated, there are times, as with trauma, that we clearly cannot sustain a direct attention, a full contact with pain. There's just no space, no safety. We're too possessed or overwhelmed. Perhaps the most powerful pathway to presence at these times is the intentional cultivation of our hearts, the direct awakening of loving kindness and compassion, because it's these qualities that give our spiritual practice a genuine quality of openness and softness. I remember hearing a story about a man that had gone to the Dalai Lama, and he was in the grip of fear, and asked the Dalai Lama how to meditate on fear. And the Dalai Lama's response was, "For now, just simply imagine that you are resting in the arms of the Buddha." I'm sure you know what it's like to feel completely trapped in fear, or completely trapped in feeling unworthiness. The experience of suffering, of being suffering Buddha, is very intense and real and gripping. And what I think we intuit deep down is that the power and space of love is big enough to heal that suffering Buddha. It's the only thing big enough to hold our fear, this love. So the essence of loving kindness practice, of what's described as the metta meditation, metta is the Pali word for loving kindness, the essence is to, in whatever way we can, remember love. Love is our nature, and we long to realize it, trust in it. But because we contract in fear, we need reminders. So cultivation of the heart is an ongoing and beautiful and central part of any spiritual path. And there are times when we're particularly contracted that it needs to be the focus. This is a story that a priest used in the sermon that I heard. And in the story, a woman is dying of AIDS and the priest is summoned. And he attempts to comfort her, but to no avail. "I'm lost," she said. "I've ruined my life and every life around me. Now I'm going painfully to hell. There is no hope for me." The priest saw a framed picture of a pretty girl on the dresser. "Who is this?" he asked. The woman brightened. "She is my daughter, the one beautiful thing in my life. And would you help her if she was in trouble or made a mistake? Would you forgive her? Would you still love her?" "Of course I would," cried the woman. "I would do anything for her. Why do you ask such a question?" "Because I want you to know," said the priest, "that God has a picture of you on his dresser." You might find as you're listening that if you can just invoke a certain image, maybe an image of someone that you really know and trust loves you, that just the remembering of that person opens the heart a little, Or you might find that if you can say certain words to yourself, like just relax, relax, it can help. The touch of another, our own touch, can resonate with this essential truth that we are connected. It can help us relax back into the boundlessness of a naturally loving awareness. So whatever activity arouses care, that's a heart meditation. In the most traditional classic metta meditation from the Theravadan tradition, the way of evoking the sense of caring is by offering phrases of care. And it could be simple phrases like, may I be filled with loving kindness, or may I accept myself this moment just as I am. Or they can be phrases of care that are similar to how Thich Nhat Hanh describes it when you say to another, darling, I care about this suffering. That's a phrase of compassion. Darling, I care about this suffering. It's so powerful when we really let in those words and trust that they're genuine. And if we can offer them to our inner being, if we can whisper those words to our inner life, we can really relax the body of fear. There's a tenderness that arises. You might try it, just whispering to your own inner life, wherever you feel contraction or conflict or fear, darling, I care about this suffering. There are many different pathways back to caring. What makes the heart meditations creative is that it's really up to each of us to sense what it is that evokes a sense of care. And it's an exploration, and it's an ongoing one. Sometimes what worked last week absolutely leaves us cold. So it's a real invitation to you to sense where you're hurting and to begin to find the ways to respond to that hurt by connecting with what gives you a sense of care. Now, as we work with shame and with fear, we become increasingly adept at realizing both a sense of spaciousness, a kind of loving awareness, and connecting to the immediate waves of experience, the rawness. And as I mentioned earlier, this is what the Buddha described as the two wings of awareness, that we can hold with love our experience and connect directly with it, see what's true. And we need both. In my own practice, one of the most powerful ways of realizing and cultivating both wings of awareness simultaneously has been through the Tibetan practice of Tonglen. And here it becomes quite clear how these facets of awareness are completely interdependent. In Tonglen meditation, we breathe in and with the in-breath, connect directly with what's here. This is cultivating that cognizant, immediate experiencing. We connect with the vulnerability, the sense of insufficiency, the fear. And it's quite counter to our habits of pulling away. To the extent that we have the strategies to neglect and judge and fight our inner life, this in-breath is learning to have a direct and honest contact showing up. It deconditions resistance. So there's breathing in, and then with the breathing out, we connect with the space that holds. We connect with an open and caring awareness. This is the container for experience, the background. We can't breathe in if we have not exhaled. We need to create the space. With the in-breath and the out-breath, as we deepen and deepen these qualities of awareness, we become the holder and the held. we become the holder, the space of awareness that life is happening in. And we become the held in the sense that the feelings of vulnerability are very beautifully embraced by this space. Now, with Tonglen practice, we often start with where there is pain or insecurity, suffering within. And it continues. Because after we've connected with and held a space for this inner vulnerability, the practice is to then sense all the beings that experience this same vulnerability. All the beings that struggle with judging themselves, that struggle with being afraid of making mistakes, of looking bad, that struggle with a very deep sense of just, I'm not okay. So we breathe in for all beings that experience this vulnerability. And in doing so, there is a wonderful and freeing realization that this is not my pain, but the pain. And this realization really extends the circle of belonging, and a very deep sense of compassion can arise. Longfellow writes, "If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility." If we can really register suffering, we forgive naturally. Now, we usually need to begin with reading our own secret history. We need to begin, and it's a very powerful practice, noticing what's going on with us and realizing the suffering that's underneath in order to release self-aversion. We have to start by forgiving and opening to the place of woundedness in our own being. We need to genuinely feel the pain that's there, forgive that it's there, and in that connecting with the pain, hold our inner life with compassion. And it's only then that there can be a genuine compassion towards another. If we prematurely try to forgive another person, it won't be real forgiveness. We'll be glossing over what's there and actually not having access to the place of woundedness within us that's still asking for attention. So it becomes a very natural sequence that we first pay attention to the woundedness in us, open up the space of compassion towards our own inner life, and then once open, we can actually see their pain. But it's not until we've made peace with our own pain. So this sequence of forgiving becomes a very deep part of our practice, and it applies to the places where we feel that we have acted in the most intolerable or unforgivable way. There is a very powerful kind of wisdom that comes when we understand that any hurtful behavior comes from a place of hurting. And what that means is even the places where we have caused injury to another out of our neediness or fear or confusion, even in those places, if we can recognize what was driving our behavior, if we can sense directly into the fear that gave rise to the behavior, out of that enlarged understanding, we can have compassion towards ourselves. For many people, this compassion deepens as we begin to realize how long we have been feeling the squeeze of unworthiness, how much of our life has been an effort to compensate for feeling that we're not okay. Sometimes, for myself, I get a kind of whiff of just how hard I've been working. It's a sense of striving. And when we really get how many life moments have been dedicated to trying to be different and be better, there can be a real deep sense of grief. And the grief is about the life lost to feeling not good enough. Feeling this grief is painful and good news. because when we really connect with that grief, we begin to relate with recognition and care. Our identity is no longer inside the wave of deficient self. Rather, our identity has enlarged, and we've become the awareness that's recognizing suffering. If we want to understand how to heal, so much of our path is this practice of beginning to hold the waves of our experience from this larger sense of being. This is the essence of spiritual reparenting. Our wounds happen when there was no large, wakeful, loving space. We were not held. So to rediscover who we are in a more healthy way, the same experiences of pain need to be experienced, but from an ocean of awareness. In any moment that we can really experience the direct suffering of shame and tenderize towards ourselves, we begin to occupy that ocean, that spaciousness that can reparent and heal the wounds. We can genuinely become intimate because we can experience in our hearts what's real. We can experience the shame, the fear, the jealousy, whatever the deities are that are arising, but experience all this with a deep and compassionate awareness. I invite you to meditate on the words of Rumi once again. When I see you and how you are, I turn my eyes away from the other. For your Solomon seal, I become wax throughout my body. I wait to be light. I give up opinions on all matters. I become the reed flute for your breath. You were inside my hand, but I kept reaching around for something. I was inside your hand, but I kept asking questions of those who know very little. I must have been incredibly simple or drunk or insane to sneak into my own house and steal money, to climb over the fence and take my own vegetables. But no more. I've gotten free of that ignorant fist that was pinching and twisting my secret self. The universe and the light of the stars come through me. I am the crescent moon put up over the gate to the festival. So this following meditation will be an opportunity to bring caring presence to an area of difficulty, to places perhaps that you've been pinching and squeezing your secret self. And in this meditation we'll include mindfulness practices as well as the compassion practice of Tonglen. So please prepare yourself by being in a comfortable posture, a posture where you're upright, so there's a quality of alertness, of presence, but also quite at ease, so you can sense a spaciousness. You might take a few full breaths, breathing in deeply, filling yourself with air, and then as you exhale, just letting go, letting go, letting go. Now scanning your current life for whatever difficulty or situation that calls your attention. Some way that you've been living that feels unforgivable, something you've done or continue to do. Something you don't like about your own being. And when you sense and choose to rest in what's calling you, let the situation be as real and vivid as it is. Sense what's so bad, what's so wrong. What's the worst thing about this situation? What does it mean about you as a person? Take your time checking with your body, sensing what emotions come up around the situation, and in your own way, saying hello, okay, this, yes. If your awareness is spacey, a little disconnected, inquire a bit more. What hurts so much about this? Feeling into the center of your body, the throat, the heart, the stomach. What's really true? If rather than spacey, you feel in some way possessed or overwhelmed, just sensing the space that this is happening in, the sounds around you. Aware of the place in your being that feels vulnerable, hurting, that feels judged. So that gradually you can feel with the in-breath that you're connecting more and more with it, that you're letting the breath come directly to where the woundedness is. For now, just emphasizing the in-breath, feeling yourself breathing to right where vulnerability lives. And with the out-breath, just breathing out, you might sense the space around you a bit. Breathing in, feeling what's there, whatever it is. It may be a feeling of shame or fear, or it might be numbness or confusion or sadness, but breathing in and honestly connecting with what's there, this moment, however it is. And then with the out-breath, allowing yourself to connect with the space that holds this, with the compassion. Breathing in and feeling what's real. Breathing out and offering care. For some, it can help to sense that with breathing in, it's like breathing in a dark, black, smoke, that painfulness that we open to and receive, and that this dark black smoke can dissolve the casing that contracts our tender heart, so that as we breathe out, we can breathe out the love of our heart. We can offer care. Breathing in, feeling the vulnerability. Breathing out, offering our love. You may wish to explore this offering of love by gently touching the heart or wherever you most feel the vulnerability. So with the touch, you're allowing yourself to breathe in, feel directly the experience, and breathe out and sense that you're touching, blessing this experience with a heart of awareness. Now we continue this practice by bringing to mind others that experience the same kind of vulnerability. And you might begin by just bringing one other person to mind, somebody that you care about, that you know struggles in a similar way. So that as you bring them to mind, you can sense their suffering. You can sense their struggle. And that you can breathe in for them. You can breathe in their pain and their vulnerability, including it in this heart of compassion. And that you can breathe out and offer this person your prayer, your care. Breathing in for this being, feeling their vulnerability, their rawness, the truth of their pain. And breathing out, sensing the spaciousness, the compassion, sensing your prayer. Just as you touched yourself, you can imagine and sense touching them gently. It's quite beautiful to sense placing your hand tenderly on that person's cheek, on their heart. Now we open the space of compassion and presence to include all beings that suffer in this way. There are so many. They may be hiding it, living to compensate, but so many that suffer from these deep feelings of unworthiness, of shame, of pain. To breathe in for all beings, to breathe in and let the suffering be felt within our heart, and to breathe out and offer our prayer, our care. And as a way of closing, just gently come back in a very present way to this body, this breath, and sense how it is. Feeling the sensations of the moment, the movement of the breath. Feeling the space of heart and mind. And for these last few moments, just resting in an open and kind awareness, letting anything that arises be touched with compassion.